everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Today we're going to have a little different program. It's a program meant to share ideas. I'm going to share a different perspective on the world that we live in. As Americans, no matter what your political, religious, cultural background, you have a reason for concern. It's just that we don't always know what to do with the crisis that we face. And different people, depending upon their socioeconomic considerations, their age, their state of health, will have to look at their own life and then take a look at the world around them and open themselves up to a larger worldview and say, have I in any way, consciously or not, participated into the abyss that I find myself now? We have more suicides than ever before in our history, more people OD'ing than ever before in our history. We have more people who are getting out of college with huge debt and no opportunity for jobs. We have people who are still in college, by the time they get out in 1, 2, or 3 years, artificial intelligence or robotics will have taken most of those jobs. Yet no one's being warned. Where are the jobs of the future? Because they're not coming from college degrees, with some specific fields as an exception, but even protected classes are now under siege. The very people who said that if you're born Caucasian, you're born of the new modern concept of original sin. You cannot change your corruptness. Because what is it to be a racist? To deny the virtue and the sanctity of another life, of another soul. So therefore, you're coming into life as a baby, just born, or even as you were developing as a fetus, with biases, cruel, harsh biases. You do not see the other as something equal to yourself and deserving trust, unconditional love and respect and opportunity. And now a whole league of academics are supporting that. The teachers' union, which I'm challenging at the head level, is helping sponsor this. Critical race theory is in all classes that they can get it into. I support teachers, as I've been one for 45 years at the college and university level. But now I'm not seeing teachers quit in protest, demonstrate in protest against the very curriculums that should not be taught. They're abhorrent. That will cause racism, not prevent it. Because being born a color does not make your entire character and monikered with a heavy stamp of a biased group legitimate. How can you legitimate something that does not exist? It's made out of complete myth. And that's just one of the challenges we face. But why we face those challenges of being canceled for telling the truth, seeking the truth, speaking the truth, or demonstrating for the truth, at the same time, where is our energy to stop the wars, to stop the suffering, to stop the abrogation of our moral responsibility to care for all people of this planet and the planet itself? Its resources continue to be taken, ripped from it, and exploited, finite resources. We do not have a second planet. So why can't we care for the one we have? And some people, as noble as they are in their gestures of wanting to care for this planet, do not seem to appreciate that the very things they choose every day are just part of that depletion. When did you question where the minerals come from for your cell phone, your computer? You say you want healthy children. What about the million children in Africa who are being exploited, and in India and in China, to make your garments, to make your furniture, to make your appliances? Do they not count? Obviously not. And what about the quality of the food you eat? When we have a nation of morbid obesity, and now we're praising that obesity. And we're making a person who is proud of being morbidly obese a hero. They get a trophy, and they have all these other supporters because the person said, growing up, I never saw anyone like me. So now you have a lot of people like you, But is that a good thing? I just helped someone lose 74 pounds as of today. There's still more to lose, but every day that a pound is lost means there's a potential for that person living another day. Otherwise, without exception, that causes a premature death with a stroke or heart attack, diabetes, and cancer. So are we saying it is better to feel good about yourself even while you're killing yourself? And the inevitable outcome is feel good with your last smile, your thumbs up, as you die 40 years before you should. That's where we're at as a nation. There are exceptions, but as a nation, what responsibility do you have for the politicians you elect, left or right? They're all sociopaths. They're all degenerates. They're all the lowest of the low. They all commit crimes against humanity. We give a Nobel Prize to a person that causes more people to die each day, than an entire year's worth of mass killings in the United States. There's no criticism at all. A person is, their character is indemnified from any responsibility for bad choices because they made it as part of the group think, the collective think. So why can't we challenge that? And the only way we challenge is by putting someone that we believe in and are equally as cult-like in our worship of that person and overlooking all their brand behavior by saying, well, it's better than the other person. No, the lesser of two evils is still evil. So I challenge the entire American population to think before you do anything more, because everything you're doing will either be a constructive or destructive outcome to everyone on earth. So we're all the teenagers in Greta Thunberg, a highly choreographed speech written for her to head a movement that didn't allow for actual change, and the change it did inspire was corporate change, political change, and to the benefit of a small group, detriment of the average American. Nothing was done intelligently. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And this is just my preamble. What this is about is what we're calling Beware the Agents of Chaos. It is impossible to live only long as life intoxicates us. Once we are sober, not a day passes without Americans witnessing another debacle in the nation's domestic and foreign policies that further grind down the last remaining threads of sustainable, coherent, and functioning nation interest. Instead of actual progress, we hear competing incantations of nonsense to, quote, make America great again, and to, quote, build back in its affirmation that the nation is in serious disarray and degenerating rapidly. For Democrats, it means throwing more money without ever seeing the consequences or outcome of that money. Just throw it. Almost always to your colleagues or those you have those quiet agreements with, your backers, the people that gave you money to keep elected. So is that the way you solve a problem? That too much money already is spent and has created inflation, created a devaluation of the dollar, created prices the average person cannot afford, as stressed as they are financially? Is that a concern? Obviously not. Seize the opportunity, declares Biden. Meet this moment in history and build the future we need. Or we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity, according to Elizabeth Warren, the full-blooded Native American Indian who took a chair for, I think, $250,000 or $300,000 to teach one course at Harvard to represent Native American women. Wow. What were the consequences of that fraud? Nothing. Quote, to build back better and create a more equitable, inclusive, and prosperous future for all Americans, end quote. So just a question, since when did anyone in power, go back to their own neighborhoods and go into their old jobs and spend time there? No, that would be inclusive. No, you're exclusive. You're now part of a you're part of a separation, a great divide that's been in existence for a long time, as long as this country has been a country. And yet the prosperousness is for you. There is no prosperous future for the vast majority of Americans. And you know that. And then there are the other voices in the echo chamber to make America great again. There's Mitch McConnell. He sobs. Yes. And he says, well, let's rebuild our military. Yes. And spend over $880 billion on it. And that's just below the line where there are more. It comes out to about $1.5 trillion. But don't we keep doing this every year? And who in that whole clique supports peace? Not Sean Hannity, not the people who are the neocons that you see on television, Lindsey Graham's. No, we've got to put boots on the grounds. We've got to put planes in the skies. How is that supposed to create peace? It doesn't. Even some dim-witted Democrats would think maybe we shouldn't be trying to have a nuclear war with China and Russia. What are you talking about? Of course we should, because we're power and we have to show them. Ronald Reagan, that fool, that person, that clown, that's who you're basing. Whoa. Wow. And Ted Cruz, quote, promoting America exceptionalism around the globe. To me, this is all lunacy, because there are no longer any adults or wise elders in the room to turn this political hoodoo into a functioning reality. And those who deny the responsibility for what they've created, they just go on and become a virtual reality program. Yeah, clapping your hands, worshiping a particular religion, sending money to the preacher so they can spend $65 million to get in a jet. Why? Completely legitimate, according to their congregation, so they can be closer to God when they're praying. Wow. That says more about the people giving the money for that $65 million jet than it does about the preachers. The German-American philosopher Hannah Arendt saw totalitarian leaders as agents of chaos who intentionally undermined the stability of society to destroy the foundations of democracy by creating fear and uncertainty. What is notably disturbing is the current administration's obsession with deceiving themselves as a benevolent force for progress. Yet any sane person can glance at the decline in authentic, sustainable progress made in America's culture for at least the past 30 years and realize the nation has one foot in hospice care. So the question is, how has all this rubbing of the build back better and make America great again genre into a genie that rubs a lamp that's supposed to work for you? Are you feeling these mantras magic? Has the descent of optimism and hope lightened upon the crown of your head chakra yet? Or maybe you have that high of genuine happiness and authentic well-being oozing forth from your pores. How does your bank account look? How has your savings built back better? Is that what we mean by build back better? Are you feeling Nancy Pelosi's fuzzy, warm assurance that, quote, as Democrats, every American has the opportunity to succeed, that every voice is heard, and that our country remains a beacon of hope and progress for generations to come? Or was that a misquote from Republican neocon Nikki Haley to assure us that, quote, America remains a shining beacon of freedom and democracy? Platitudes, blue and red, all sound the same because such cliches have been repeated incessantly for decades. And putting aside the so-called progress made in easier access to anti-anxiety and depression medications and better suicide hotlines, hey, I'm not happy with life. Not a problem. Want an assisted living center? They got a lot of them in Canada. Do you want to hear my problem? No. If you've got the problem, we've got the solution, and we got the pill that put you there. I see. Okay. How is the mental health of American youth faring? Therefore, where has any genuine progress been achieved to improve the quality of human life? Surely paying heed to Tolstoy's above quotes are long overdue. We need to wake up and realize that to continue this imbecilic ritual of rubbing counterfeit lamps of feel-good propaganda, especially those of you out in Sedona, what's the latest crapshoot there? Let's all get rich by investing in someone from Nigeria. I know a cousin that knows a prince. They've got $40 million to give us. Let's just give them $1 million in return. Yeah. Wow. How far down the gutter have we slid? Our culture of absolutism breeds the very conditions for violence and conflict that air nightly on the news. The detractors of absolutism, tyrannies, are perceived as enemies. The firm belief in absolutes is a condition leading people to justify egregious actions in the name of a greater good without considering the consequences. Does this not accurately describe today's cancel culture in the most militant wings of different communities, critical race theories, institutional atheist skepticism, and medical determinism? What is the number one cause of death in America? Heart attacks, and then followed by strokes and cancer? No, it's iatrogenic, medically induced. I see. So our doctors and medical practices are killing more people than disease. That's correct. Okay, well, surely there is some form of redemption through change. There is no change. There's no meeting for people to have change. Why should they? They're rewarded for the outcome. And the outcome is they profit. The hospital profits. Pharmaceutical company profits. The private medical practice profits. The large groups of financiers called equity partners that are buying up all the doctor's offices and determining what will be the price of a procedure. That's who benefits. So we don't care about how many lives we actually save and how many illnesses we can prevent. It's all about how much money we can make. Is that red or blue, conservative or liberal? Unfortunately, it has nothing to do with it. You're dealing in the wrong game. So whether it is blind faith in the absolutism of Fauci's so-called science or Marjorie Taylor Greene's messianic return of Trump and Biden's proclamation that, quote, transgender Americans shape our nation's soul, really? Or Janice Yellen's incoherent gibberish before a congressional committee to account for the country's economic malaise, or the neocons' hysterical obsession with State Department Pentagon to throw away hundreds of billions of dollars and weapons into the ever-devouring black hole of Zelensky's Ukraine. There are no signs of return to stability or sanity. And this list of misadventures, inept decision-making, and reckless blundering can be multiplied 100-fold. Together, all roads now lead towards a dire picture of America's inevitable collapse. But nations don't collapse just all at once. Civilizations don't collapse within weeks or years. But America's is collapsing in parts, not all at once. The rich and the powerful, those who can protect themselves from the inevitability of climate change that they help create with their private jets and their lifestyles and having their 100 homes, no, they'll be protected. They'll live another day. It's you who won't. And yet watch them in front of you praise themselves and dance on red carpets like some strutting psychotic peacocks in their regalia, from rap artists who care not about where they came from or de-ghettoizing their neighborhoods or helping truly those who suffer less than them. It's all about them. Massive narcissism we've never seen at this level in human history. In rulers, yes. In the elite, yes. In the Gilded Ages, robber barons, the Gouls, the Swearingens, the Hills, the Fisks, the Astors, the Vanderbilts. Yes, but not average people. The United States continues to sink in the murky, toxic waters in the middle of the Rubicon. Sadly, Americans have forgotten how to swim and is no longer capable of swimming back to shore. The hard, cold facts are that American exceptionalism only exists in the dreamlike hallucinations of our politicians and those who control the public narrative. The U.S. global's hegemonic military strength wanes daily. Reaching diversity quotas, Trump's talent, Trump's merit, Trump's scholarship, Trump's determination, and Trump's truth of your ability to be a professional with expertise, that is irrelevant. The only thing that's relevant is what's your sexual gender, what's your color. That's all we care about. And we'll hire you. We'll put you on an airline as a pilot. Yeah. Colleges and universities have denigrated to Napoleonic-era lunatic asylums that reward self-centered, hedonic individualism, and manic rebellion. College students cannot have a civil conversation. They don't know how to have spittle thrown at people, hate, and then, as they did last week, twice, once in Albany, New York, at the university, where a person was simply going to give a lecture, invited, and that person was not allowed to, and then the Bibles were burned in the university. Did you hear about that? No. Did you hear about the person wanting to speak at a university in California but was beaten physically? But there were no arrests. Why should there be? Not the way our justice system is today. Is that civility? Is that what critical thinking in an education of higher degree allows? No. No. The mobs are in the street and are little more than bland reflections of a Jungian shadow, of the instability and disorder created by the agents of chaos who sit in the seats of power. Just as the individual has a shadow, so wrote Jung, so does society at large. And just as the individual must come to terms with his shadow, so too must society, if it is to be healthy and whole. The rising confusion among our youth over their self-identity and gender, moral alienation, and a lack of existential purpose in this technological-driven, materialistic society has reduced our youth to sentient robots screaming for self-expression. And all we hear is the scream. This is one cause of today's groupthink of social and political unrest and its destructive outcomes. Nobel laureate Bertrand Russell warned that collective passions have a penchant to inflame hatred and rivalry directed towards other groups. He was also acutely aware that science is no substitute for virtue. The heart is as necessary for the good life as the head. Most Americans have now become so desensitized, so how the government adversely impacts every nick and cranny in their lives. Instead of running away from crisis, we do everything to the contrary to magnify the problems, but not seek solutions. So if the environmental and social crisis continue to spiral out of control, understand it is because America is only exceptionally pathetic. The nation has quenched its illusions and stupor far too long on Aldous Huxley's Soma. Now its intoxicating effects are giving rise to an explosion of hatred, rage, and self-serving narcissism in the streets, in the classrooms, corporate boardrooms, in the sitcoms staged in congressional chambers, because Congress is nothing but a sideshow, a freak show, a cartoonish reality show. Unfortunately, unless we identify the defining characteristics of America's culture at this historical moment and its causes, the pathway to widespread social collapse will accelerate. And we are right now in the midst of social collapse. You may not see it, but do you see 50 million Americans in abject poverty? Do you see millions of young children having no place to call home, sleeping in shelters or vans or cars? No, you do not. Do you see how many people are hungry and need a meal and don't have it? No, you do not. Do do you see how many people could work and don't work? And so we can say that the real unemployment rate is 28%, but the official unemployment rate is 3.5%. Guess which ones? All of the media, without exception, including all the business media who would know otherwise, produce the lie. They give the pretense that we're a thriving society. Some industries, some people are thriving. The average person is not. And for those in the professional classes, when you put all the professional classes together, including those who are at the lower end financially and those who are at the higher end financially, you're dealing with over 30 million Americans. And they've always thought that we have it the best. We're highly educated. We're deferred to. We're considered the best and brightest at whatever we do. People come to us because we're a famous doctor. They don't look at the outcome. They don't see how many of our patients died or were given the wrong treatment or operation. They just care about the image that we're the best. We don't go to the restaurant that is serving the best food with the best service at the best price. We go to the one where there's a long line where you can't get in. Can I get in? No, you can't. Who are you? I'm nobody. Well, then you certainly can't get in. If you were somebody, we'd make a table for you. Okay, well, I see a celebrity there. Well, they're a movie star. Okay, well, we pay $20 to see them in a movie, and that's just watching them in make-believe. I'm a real person. I build houses. Can I get in? No, you're not a celebrity. So we'll take away the table from a person that's actually building something we use and give it to someone whose whole life is an illusion, and they're the ultimate self-pitying and narcissistic people. I see. How's your food? It stinks. Is your service terrible? Expensive? You bet. So why is everyone in line? Well, why don't you ask the people in line? Since the time of the Italian philosopher and the jurist, Vico, in the 18th century, anthropologists, historians, and philosophers have made efforts to discover patterns wherein nations and cultures undergo cycles of growth, decay, and rebirth. Vico called these cyclic patterns in the human history recorso, or stages of reoccurrence that are observed in histories of individual cultures and civilizations. Other important individuals have attempted to map these historical and generational cycles and to identify their characteristics and causes, including the Swiss anthropologist John Bachofen in the 1887, Oswald Spengler in 1936, and the historian Arnold Tobinambi in 1975. Carol Quigley was 1977. Strauss and Howell, Peter Turchin, and others all contributed something. However, perhaps most notable and long forgotten are the cyclic patterns leading to a cultural collapse anticipated by a man named Sorokin. Sorokin was a Russian-American intellectual and social visionary who co-authored Harvard University's sociology department. Actually, he co-founded it in 1931. He was born and educated in Russia. He was arrested by the Soviet authorities for holding critical views of the communist regime. That sounds familiar today. But was released and fled to the United States. Years later, in 1929, he was kidnapped by the Soviet agents in Paris. He was sentenced to a gulag labor camp, but was again released and forced into permanent exile. Sorokin's 1937 magnum opus, Social and Cultural Dynamics, was the culmination of 20 years' research to identify the cycles nations and cultures undergo to eventually lead to critical crisis and their ultimate collapse. By today's college standards, Sorokin could never land a professorship at an American college university. His theories have been almost categorically ignored by academia and criticized for being too pessimistic. He upheld values that many today would call small c conservative and traditional values, especially on his emphasizing higher moral and spiritual values. Well, surely we have those who are embracing higher moral and spiritual values today. Some, absolutely. And thank goodness for it, because that is the only thing keeping our disintegrating society intact. but that too will change shortly. Sorokin is out of step with today's neoliberal intelligentsia and critical theory wokeism. Oddly, his modern admirers happen to be the left-leaning transpersonal psychologist Richard Tarnas, ecologist Wendell Berry, and political philosopher Charles Taylor. What they all share in common is a deep appreciation for the pivotal importance of high moral and spiritual values in order to sustain a functioning and life-affirming culture wherein citizens can thrive. If we take a panoramic view of America in 2023, Sorokin's warnings of Western society's inevitable collapse are in plain sight. He said the current crisis, by the way, he wrote this in his book, which I recommend you read, called The Crisis of Our Age, has been created by a false concept of progress, which identifies material growth with true progress and overlooks the fact that there is no real progress without spiritual and moral development. While we may pride ourselves in our culture's technological ingenuity in artificial intelligence and virtual reality and robotics and the galloping towards us transhumanism, for Sorokin, a society that only develops technologically is a half society, because humans are then simply reduced to cogs in a vast machine whose only purpose is to produce and consume goods. If you really mattered, if we really mattered, would we not be invited to share our insights and thoughts? But we're not, ever, unless it's mandatory to go before a community board or an FDA hearing. But when was the last time they ever took our advice and passed a rule based upon it? How about never? They all give lip service to openness. We care. You do not care if you're a technocrat and a bureaucrat. We're just there to be exploited. That's vulture capitalism. So you don't care for us. For those throwing curses back and forth across the ideological political divide, both sides blindly serve more powerful interests who are eager to exploit them as a means to an end. Those who get caught up in this American charade reduce themselves to half-wits, unwillingly creating a technocratic society based upon conformity and uniformity. True diversity and authentic individuality, which are motivated by higher principles, are technocratic tyrannies, obstacles that must be overcome and destroyed. Technology must destroy the individual, especially the individual who will not comply. But the youth, we want our gadgets. We don't care if we have to sell our soul to get them, because we don't even know how to spell soul. I was flabbergasted to see a camera on the campus of UCLA at Berkeley, and no matter what question that was asked, the simplest question, they couldn't answer. They couldn't answer anything. Then they went to New York, on the streets of New York. Nobody could answer a single question. Then in Florida, nobody could answer a question. How is it that we become so functionally illiterate about everything? That's what happens when technology takes over and you feel that your only substance to keep you alive is to keep connected to the evernet, because it is forever. According to Sorokin, who died in 1968, the U.S. has reached its sensate stage of its social cycle, its death cycle, as insentient. Clearly, we have now reached the hypersensate level immediately before rapid dissolution. In the crisis of our age, all the signs in their nation for what he termed the cataclysm of the sensate culture were rapidly being assembled to culminate in not too distant future. Rampant consumerism, materialism, domination of individualism, self-gratification and indulgence, hedonism, moral weakness, the decay of traditional social bonds, and a collective social emptiness. The sensate stage's climax is chaos. And what do we have today? chaos everywhere, but we won't admit it. Did you not recently hear me say to those in New York who do not want to change any of the rules of crime and the responsibility of the criminal act? In fact, to the contrary, they are unmoved by it because they're never victimized. And I just took one example. I could have taken others. I could have taken Riverside Drive, but I took Park Avenue going clear up. Then I took Fifth Avenue, Central Park South, and Central Park West, and 110th Street. And these are where the wealthiest people in America live. And this is their playground. And this is why the real estate is so astronomically high. You have to have millions upon millions of extra dollars to buy any of these homes, and a lot to rent one, if it's ever for rent. And so if you love all that so much, then why don't you take your family for a walk in the park tonight? Beautiful park, beautifully designed. Or how about taking them up Riverside Drive? Yeah, to around the George Washington Bridge. There's a walkway. No, they won't. Well, why not just take them on a subway? No, they won't do that either. Oh, so you're telling me there's a contradiction. There's a half-truth. You love the city. You love your apartment. You love what your wealth and power and prestige can give you and what it provides you in our highly class society, because you're in that upper crust. You're the blue bloods. Well, you're not really blue blood. You're red blood, but you can call yourself blue blood. You want to make yourself seem significant. More than significant, the only measure of your life's journey and where you're in that transition from point to point to point until senescence catches up to you, is your relevance. So if you can no longer show by your wealth and power and what extremes you go to in spending that money and glorifying yourself, then who's to know that you're relevant? What good is to have $1 billion if you can't show people what you can buy or how you can spend $1 billion? So celebrity status is more important than anything. And so we strive for it. That's a goal. So this is what brought us to this place of chaos, but we're not looking at the chaos. What do you think is going to happen when so many Americans, probably about 200 million, are excluded and are left to fend for themselves, where the agencies of government have failed them, the state and local governments have failed them, those with power and wealth, well, they're off to Mediterranean cruises on someone's giant yacht, like Leonardo DiCaprio does or David Geffen does. What do you think is going to happen when these people don't have adequate food that day? Do you think everything is going to stay stable because you want it to be? Do you think another law punishing them, making it easier to arrest people, is going to make a difference? That will only make a difference as long as they have something they fear losing. When a person has nothing more to lose, watch the outcome. And that, in time, will have another poignant insight. A predominant sensate culture is vulnerable to external threats, especially economic crisis. We're losing the power of the dollar. It is inevitable. It is not when, but in the next, possibly as short as a year to 2 years, absolutely, the dollar will collapse. Everything attached to the dollar will collapse. The money in your bank account will collapse. Your 401k will collapse. Corporations will collapse, a lot of them, or lose a lot of their influence and money. We will not completely implode, but a lot of people will suffer a lot of pain. The wealthiest won't, because they're already ahead of the cycle because they have the inside information on everything that's happening. And so therefore, they'll be warned. Get out of that stock. Get into that one. Here's where you shouldn't live. Here's where you should live. I see. So those who, like the Titanic, those who were the most famous were given the first seats in the Titanic, or a lot of them. Yep, the powerful always go ahead of the line, just like in that restaurant, because, well, I'm a somebody. I'm relevant. You're a nobody. You're irrelevant. You're a working-class person. You're a schmuck. I see. So that's where we're at. We've been there for a long time. We're just not now acknowledging it. And so when you take a look in America today, you see a global economic and military hegemony, and it has a big growl and no bite. American foreign diplomacy is deplorable. We're all about war, not about peace. We say peace, freedom, and democracy. We mean tyranny, control, and exploitation of natural resources by corrupting your leadership, which is easy to do. Nation after nation is turning their backs on the U.S.-led West for more amicable and neighborly partners such as China, Russia, and India. And for a long time, who cared about China, Russia, and India? Well, now you better care. When China's gross domestic product is $16 trillion, just a few years ago it was $3 trillion, they're going to exceed the United States within the next 2 years. And that means then the yuan, which will be the primary currency, along with other currencies from Saudi Arabia, and they'll have upwards of 60 or more countries. They'll represent probably 70% of the world's population. And they will be building infrastructure, high-speed rail across Africa. They'll be bringing farming that can be sustained in agriculture-depleted areas. What do we bring? Another military base? We have over 757 of those. The reason for America's fragility is that the nation has appallingly betrayed its moral and spiritual resources and therefore is unable to cope with adversity, internal or external, to meet and overcome its challenges. Neither is America internally resilient, nor therefore is it is unfit to adapt to the necessary changes underway to preserve its survival. Well, let me put it in a mere simple way. Name me the city in the United States, I said city, not just neighborhood, that in the past 30 years we have de-ghettoized, brought jobs back, living wage jobs, that we've used people within the community to rebuild their community, where we have peace and harmony, where people have joy. And show me this city. You cannot, because it does not exist. Walk the mean streets of Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Atlanta. At one time, all great cities. Now, nope. You got to be very careful everywhere. Should that be the way that we live? When all the causes and conditions for a final collapse are assembled, a nation's fate is no longer negotiable. Only the time gap can be slowed or accelerated. Despite the original values of American liberalism, which were brought forth during the Age of Reason and the Renaissance, the flame of non-dogmatic rational inquiry, today's liberals, with some exceptions, have perverted its own legacy, at least its modern legacy. Remember, the Democratic Party is the one that formed the KKK. The Democratic Party supported slavery and Jim Crow. It was only in the late 50s and early 60s that we began to see the rebirth of something new, same name, different outcome, now reverting back again. This exclusivist humanism, as the prominent cultural philosopher Charles Taylor has termed it, is a faux universalism with a myopic understanding which relies on the secular power structure in government that in turn acts on their behalf to marginalize and at times demonize alternative belief systems that do not embrace a secular universalism. Hence, the new radical left and even federal agencies no longer tolerate diversity of traditional beliefs and traditional values and worldviews. No. The FBI's illegal surveillance activities on Twitter and the agency's harassment of peaceful anti-abortion Catholics are just minor examples. More alarming is the murder of three children and three school staff in Nashville by mentally disturbed person with gender dysphoria who is being eulogized without a woke tear wept for the victims. That shows you how far the left has gone. But the right has gone just as far, and it's for other reasons. Rather than read the works of history's intellectual and literary giants, it is better to wipe away or rewrite the past altogether in order to please the neurosis of the most vocal and functionally illiterate and belligerent masses. Did they actually understand Kill a Mockingbird? No, they did not. It was an anti-racist book, but it was offensive. The classic's offensive. How far can they go until there's nothing left to read? Because everything is then offensive. And where was the last demonstration by college professors against this tyranny of the intellect, where you learn how to destroy true intellectualism and curiosity for an absolute codified belief that there is nothing that can be written unless it is written, so it will not offend, but someone will always be offended by something, and therefore we should write nothing. So, where do we have an alternative open humanism, a more inclusive, pluralistic, values-driven dialogue and mutual respect towards the wide scope of human experiences? The debate is whether or not American society has already passed the tipping point of a fateful demise as events worsen, America's delirium escalates, and that is what we fear. And still, the majority of American citizenry willingly participate in and contribute to everything that is wrong. This is part of Mummer's charade in the halls of power. Our defining culture has succumbed to irrational hostility, collective emotional hysteria, or what Sorokin called cultural schizophrenia, which is when individuals in a grossly materialistic society cling desperately to a false sense of individuality that is completely divorced from any deeper purpose in life. The result is social fragmentation. You heard me say recently, we have become a country that is culturally balkanized. We have refused to accept the changes, the positive constructive changes that have been made in all areas of our life, in women's rights, in racial rights, and minority rights, and reclamation of nature's own rights. We have made huge progress from where we were. Not complete, not perfect, but now they want to erase everything as if we've never done a good thing, never had a good thought. They are so wrong. All they're doing is creating a social fragmentation, conflict, and confusion. At this moment, we witness both sides of the left-right political divide screaming about their victimhood while actively participating in society's destruction. And yet there are no massive mobilized protests, not by professors, not by school teachers, not by police officers, not by medical doctors, not by nurses, not by sociologists, not by Wall Street bankers. No. You have been betrayed by every single institution in America. Every single one. Because none of them have taken it forth to protect your interest. We have become a nation of cowards. The silent majority? Yeah, you're more than silent. You're fearful. And that's unfortunate. We do have people who have found the truth and are exercising it, but you wouldn't know about it because their life, their choices are never given a form in the mainstream. They're never, the ways they live in harmony, in peace, and respect for one another and nature is not in the classroom. Nope. Renewable energy, access to healthy foods, banning toxic chemicals in everyday household products that are otherwise forbidden in other countries, and government-sanctioned censorship, an illegal surveillance state, a justice system that indentures the poor, 50 million Americans living in abject poverty, and a thoroughly corrupt medical system from top to bottom and as corrupt as hell. None of these seem important enough to warrant a simple march, a proclamation, letters written, nothing. And those courageous individuals who have stood up and who have marched and demonstrated, to the Max Blumenthal's and Aaron Montes, to the wonderful energy of the journalists like Naomi Wolf and Matt Taibbi, Glenn Greenwald, and to others, Jimmy Dore. Thank you But when is it written that you alone should stand between the enemy, the prey, and those who would take advantage of every weakness in the system they created to exploit that prey? At birth, you were not given a contract that you must spend your life indentured to fighting other people's battles, finding everyone else's truth to make sure that they're protected and using it, the sanctity of their choices. So what does this say about an unsupportive mass public that never thanks you and hides away so it not be involved in the conflict? I blame the people who have yet to take a stand. You can live in your cowardly state of self-righteous indignation, or you can take to the streets in a civil manner, but voice your concerns. March, even if humanity's survival to the majority is inconsequential. Today, America's media is incapable of reporting on the true state of the country's domestic culture. The media can no longer create a believable story that reflects the actual economic and social conditions of average Americans because it has been unable to move beyond the harsh social divisions fueled by animosity and distrust, balkanizing the entire American public down into simple tribes. Very earlier, Sorokin observed the media's adverse trajectory. As early as 1941, he was warning about the consequences of the media's sensationalism and entertainment, its focus on negative news that would breed social anxiety and fear. Sorokin also shared his deep concern about the media's emphasis on materialism and consumerism and its impact upon the social and mental development of young people. It is difficult to disagree with him now that both conservative and liberal media have neutered the intellectuals of their most loyal viewers. The right suffers from pre-rational superstition and anti-intellectualism. The left suffers from a highbrow intellect and moral impoverishment. Neither is capable of serving as a revolutionary force to relieve suffering and fight on behalf of individual freedoms and peace and further rights outside of cultic groupthink. What is the Democratic Party? A cultic groupthink. What is the Republican Party? A cultic groupthink. What is the business community? The food community? Cultic groupthink. Moreover, our corporate media has succeeded in turning the U.S. into a laughingstock among the vast majority of other countries. Rather, a functional media would be honestly responsible for a balanced and meaningful view of the world, one that focuses on the positive as well as the negative, at the same time emphasizing constructive moral values. In conclusion, unfortunately, American media is now beyond redemption. For those who have retained a thread of philosophical and spiritual inquiry and values, there can be no support for the psychobabble of those who would drown out the voices of reason and human decency. It is left to those of us who have been canceled and excluded from the national dialogue about our country's deterioration to continue to probe more deeply into our own lives and build community with like-minded people. And finally, we might take to heart the words of one of Tolstoy's great admirers: nothing in all the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. So said Martin Luther King Jr. Our true enemies are irrational, dogmatic beliefs and faux liberal values, which equally keep us enslaved to a system that only serves its own interest and dehumanizes us to collateral damage, to the system's failings. All imperial civilizations ultimately collapse. Despite the U.S.'s rapid decline, it remains within each person's means to not be a helpless victim when it sinks completely. Find the places that are most suitable for you to live, where you have freedom of speech, freedom of choice, sanctity over your body, and the consequences of being able to know what your child's curriculum is and what you want that child to learn. It is the parents who must also take responsibility if their child is acting out. How did that happen without the parents' awareness? Become aware. Become conscientious. Thank you all for listening. I will take a few calls if you choose to call in. I hope you do, and you can share your thoughts on my commentary today. This will be posted on GaryNall.com, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear what you have to say, and we'll see if any of you are calling in, if you are. And by the way, tonight, while you're calling in, and just let me know if someone is calling in, I'd be happy to take their call. Tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock, I'll be interviewing Professor J.T. Coles, C-O-L-E-S. The topic, the militarization of cancel culture. He's a real heavyweight, a former researcher at the Cognitive Institute at Plymouth University in the United Kingdom, where he received his doctorate. And so we'll be talking about what the hell has happened to our culture and why can't we get ahead of it. We have 3 minutes to go. Do we have any calls coming in?
No calls, Gary.
No calls? Okay. Then let me just, we only have 3 minutes and we don't want to go into Utrecht's time. I'm going to be wrapping up the roster for our health support group, meaning for 1 or 2 weeks, from May 14th to the 27th, down in Texas at the Villa, we're going to be doing wonderful opportunity to learn. All of my lectures will be on life. I have some of the best lectures I've ever written that you've never heard before on where are you in your life process, which transition place are you at, and can you repurpose your life at this time to regain your health, your longevity, your meaning and your purpose, your joy, your passion and your enthusiasm, your creativity. Every one of my lectures is on that. You'll be getting great vegan food, beautifully prepared and presented juices all day long and health drinks. You'll be having exercise classes by one of the best exercise teachers in the United States. Her name is Cecilia. You're going to get meditation classes and deep thinking classes to resolve your stress and help you be at peace and calm with Mitchell Rabin. You're going to have a lot of good stuff coming at you all day, every day. You can do as little or as much as you want. If this interests you, if you would like to participate, because we were full and a couple of people canceled who can't come, then you can just give a call. And if you call Luann, she will talk with you because you got to go through her in order to make sure this is right for you. And at the same time, we were full until yesterday, and then one of the people coming to our anti-aging could not make it. So if you want to come to the anti-aging, which is going to be at the same time, it's a different protocol, you won't be in the same classes, this is going to be the most important anti-aging study we've ever done. I have all new protocols. We have screened people so they don't have pre-existing diseases. So we're thinking big. We're thinking that we're going to add, before we added 2.2 years of people's life to people's lifespan, not according to us, according to a major university's anti-aging division that we were using their special blood workup that measures the actual DNA age of our cells. We would like to see if we can add 5 years onto a person's lifespan, healthy years. So everything is about anti-aging, and it's terrific. I brought in some new lectures. Dr. Peter Resnick is coming. Dr. Amar Gadal is coming. We have wonderful workshops all day. So if you want to come for either group, they're both at the same time, give a call, and I'll give you Luann's phone number here. It's 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you tune in tonight. It's going to be a real scorcher. Have a nice day, everyone.